Z-Axis Life, seeking truth, setting the captives free, allowing the true self to live.
This is a rather advanced topic. It's advanced for me anyway. Loving your enemies. I don't know about you, but Matthew 5 through 7, the chapters are just like, oh my gosh, I can never do this stuff. There's like, I mean, if you're going to read them as rules, oh my word. I break five of them before I leave the house in the morning. I don't read them as rules. I read Matthew 5 through 7, which is really Matthew's introduction to Jesus' teachings, really, right after the Beatitudes. And I don't think Jesus is telling us rules, because I don't think God's system is rule-based. But I do think he's telling us what love looks like. When you've got it right, when your heart has truly changed inside, and it's not a discipline thing, and it's not a sacrifice thing, it's actually coming from a place of truth, a place of correct perspective, then this is how you behave. And in my spiritual growth path, I've watched myself start checking off some of those descriptors. But that love your enemies one, sure. I mean, I used to think, yeah, if you're talking about, like, you know, if our country's in a war, do I have compassion for the other side, like the civilians and stuff? Yeah. Okay, check. I love my enemies. Yeah. But I don't think that's what he's talking about. I just don't. I've spent the first several years of my growth working on the power zone of love, which is fueled by truth. Real power comes from knowing that you're standing in a place of truth. When you know with certainty that you can see a wide enough perspective, and the difference between the world's version of power and God's version of power is, there's two differences, or several, I guess. One is the world's version of power comes from a place of pride. I'm better than you. It also comes from a place of power over. I have power over you. This is what gives the word power a bad name. And thirdly, those two positions come from an attitude that lacks mercy. So knowing what another person is up to, really up to, and let's say they're kind of up to something that's not good, that's not a virtue. That's half of the facet of love called power. That's the wisdom piece. It doesn't become a virtue or true, real love until you add in the mercy piece. And mercy is seeing the other person, what they're up to, and how they came to be that way. Having compassion for what that person went through, mostly as a child, but even as an adult, that formed the way he or she deals with the world today. I had to work a long time on mercy. I'm not sure I've got it all down pat, although I've got it much better than I was. I thought all I had to do was see truth, which for me was a real feat. There's a lot of people, particularly controllers, see a lot more truth than controlees do. So for a controlee to start seeing truth, that's a tough one. And it's mainly because a controlee can't, we all project onto other people the way we think, because that's all we really know is how we think. And a controller, let's say, is familiar with both the good and the bad in the world, because they have the good and the bad, a little more bad inside them, in my opinion, than a controlee does. And so they're aware of both good and bad that exists outside of them as well. A controlee likes to think everyone thinks that the way they do, which is trying to be good and self-sacrifice and dependent and all those things that look like virtue to themselves. So it's a little tougher for a controlee to expand their perception beyond, I'm good, I'm going after good, everybody's going after good. For them to realize, there are people in the world who are up to no good, whether they're conscious of it or not. So for a long time, I was patting myself on the back that I had gotten over that hurdle, that I could now see people who were not up to any good at all. But it wasn't until the mercy piece came in that I didn't feel the need to point that out to all and sundry. But, okay, so let's fast forward a little bit. So now I can see much more clearly what others are up to. I can see much more clearly the controllees in the world who are trying to do good, who have at least one facet of love unblocked and open. So these are people who can be vulnerable, or they can show compassion, or they show a lot of mercy, or they're extremely creative, or they allow their emotions to flow, something like that, right? Whereas most controllers, I've yet to find an exception, but I'm not willing to make that a blanket statement. Most controllers have all the facets of love blocked to some degree. Most of them to a great degree. Which means they don't like to feel their emotions. They definitely do not like to feel grief. They would rather not be self-aware. They do think they're better than others. And there's pride, which lacks mercy. And they're not going to go down into the depths of negative emotions with you by showing compassion. And they might be vulnerable to you once or twice in the very beginning to make you think they're interested. But after that, they never really are interested in being vulnerable. So most controllers have all six facets of love blocked. I just listed them, but we cover those in another podcast. Now, what I was doing was, it was such a feat for me to be able to start seeing people more clearly. Seeing people, okay, this is a person who is more, has controlling characteristics, and this is a person that I can experience real love with. We can have a circular thing going. Real love is a win-win. Nobody self-sacrifices, not a duality system. Both people gain from a real love transaction. And then I'd say, okay, these other people are controllers, and I'm not going to be able to experience real love with these people. So I'm just not interested in them, which is a good step. Look, we all have to get to that step, because if we don't get to that step, we just end up being walked on, stepped on, crushed, all that stuff, right? And life becomes not worth living. So it is a necessary step to go through. But it's not the end game. It's not the end game to say, well, I'm only going to interact with people who can show me love back. And that's what Love Your Enemies is about. You know, he says, Jesus says, look, anybody can can share love with their friends, with people who will give love back. But that's not what I'm asking of you. And that's not what love really is. For God loves his enemies. He gives the rain that they need to grow their food, just as he does his believers. And the reason he does that is because that's what love does. So how do you get to a point where you love your enemies and not just your friends? Because love is an emotion, and you can't make yourself feel an emotion, much as we try. We spend our lives trying to make ourselves not feel emotions. That's all our self-soothing behaviors and stuff, controlling our world and others. The only way to change an emotion, I think there's only two ways to change an emotion. One is to discover truth, a radical alteration in our perception. Usually it widens our field of vision. We pull out and we can see more. We can see more about us or about others or about God or about how this all works. But I'm currently exploring the other option of how to change an emotion. And I believe this one is being rooted in Jesus himself. This is what he talks about when he says, I am the vine. You're to get everything you need from me. You know, for a long time, I was like, what the heck does that mean? And if you read John 17, my word, I'm in you and God's Father is in me and we want to be in you. And I'm like, my head's spinning. I'm like, there's a lot of oneness, use in this, whatever going on in this chapter. It's rough, man. You read that chapter and you're like, what? Well, okay, I was. But I'm exploring this personal relationship with Jesus. I've gone down the truth path a lot. I'm practiced at it. I'm pretty good at gaining insights and new perceptions and new perspectives. But this relationship with Jesus where I can draw directly from his divine nature, and it will actually fuel my emotions directly. I haven't tried that before. This is a brand new spiritual skill that I'm developing. And so there's a person in my life who's got all six facets of love blocked. And I was very dependent on this person. I allowed this person to control me because I was dependent on him. And I finally broke free of that dependence, relatively, as much as I could, we'll say. And that breaking free enabled me to begin to shift that dependence from this person onto Jesus himself. And the way I could break that dependence was to see him for who he really is. He's not up to any good. When we have the facets of love blocked, in order to keep them blocked, we end up perpetrating evil onto others. I'll give you an example. I would be vulnerable with this person, telling him how I feel about something, or actually crying in front of him. But that stirred his compassion, which stirred emotion in him, which is not acceptable. His belief system does not allow emotion to be displayed. So he could not show me compassion. So on my side, that looks like rejection. You know, crying in front of a person who can't hold your hand or cry with you, or at least raise the middle of their eyebrows up in their face and look like an emoji, right? It feels icky. It's bad. It makes the person who's being vulnerable feel disconnected and afraid and anxious. But it's all born out of the blocked person's effort to keep those emotions blocked. They're not mean on purpose. They're not withholding compassion to hurt you. It's just the result of trying to keep that love from flowing. So when we have facets of love that are blocked, we end up doing hurtful things to other people. It's a byproduct of our defense mechanisms, our self-protections, our false self, our belief system that's kept us safe all those years. So I figured out finally what this person was up to. This person's goal in life was to not feel, to not be self-aware, to continue to lie to himself about who he is and who others are. This person's goal in life was to never be vulnerable, to not feel compassion, to not feel grief. And in order to keep all those things blocked, the self-will is fully in control. So I had to see him for who he was to break my dependency. But that landed me in a world of black and white, where he's all bad and there's no good in him at all. But that's not what Jesus calls us to do. It's not what how Jesus lived while he was here. And I've been struggling with this issue. I've been writing in my journal and praying and asking for help, because every time I was around this person, I was feeling all three negative emotions: anxiety, sadness, and anger. All three. I'm like, how do I deal with this person? I know what he's up to, and yet these emotions are still, they're still flooding me. Well, I got the insight. I heard the insight, and as soon as I heard it, I didn't want to hear it. I could feel resistance. And the insight was, you are to show him compassion. My immediate reaction was, hell no. I don't want to do that. This person is up to, he wants to perpetrate evil. Now, he doesn't want to perpetrate evil, but he's going to, right? Based on how he lives his life. I don't want to show him compassion. I want him to burn in the fires of hell for what he's done to me or what he's done to others. I want him to pay. I want justice. Compassion is the opposite of justice. But I knew within seconds of that insight, and seconds later after I felt my own resistance to it, I could see how I was contributing to the situation. When I was around him, I felt so sad and disconnected. My emotions turned off. Because there was nothing coming from him, mine turned off. Because there was such disconnection, my anxiety increased. Because there was no acknowledgement of me as a fellow human being, my anger rose up. But all he was sensing, he didn't know he was doing all this. All he knows is what's coming back from me. He doesn't know who started it. All he knows is that now I'm angry and afraid and sad. So now he feels angry and afraid and sad. And guess what? That's going to make him behave with deadness and with power and with it's going to make him behave in a way that participates in the circle. You see how this is going as a circle between him and me and him and me and him and me and him and me. And I realized someone has to break that circle. All this time, I've been expecting and wanting this person who I was considering my enemy, my spiritual enemy, to change, to do something different. Just be vulnerable, for God's sake. Just tell me how you're feeling, and I will respond with compassion. Just feel something, and I will respond with real love. And I felt powerless because I couldn't make him let anything flow. No emotion whatsoever. It was all just politeness. Well, when this insight came, I realized I could break the circle. I could show him compassion and mercy. Now, I'm not called to be vulnerable to him. Jesus didn't tell the Pharisees about his personal problems, okay? He talked about his fears, and he wept in front of his disciples, his friends, people who could show him compassion back. He didn't do that. He wasn't vulnerable to the general public or to people who were blocked in love. But there is nothing to preclude us from showing compassion or mercy, kindness, generosity, forgiveness to someone who may not respond. In fact, this is the essence of love. And I also realized that I was still wanting something back. And when this insight came, the compassion flooded into me. It didn't come from me. It wasn't sourced in me. I could feel that. I knew that. I didn't have the perspective that it took to have that level of compassion for him. I was moved to show him mercy, and I took him food, and I took him other physical comforts, and I hugged him, and he hugged me back, and he actually cried a little. He actually did respond with some vulnerability to my compassion. But what was really freeing was going into it. I did not need it back. Yes, I got something back, and it was very limited. But I was free to show compassion and mercy with no expectation of it being returned at all. Why? I was getting the source of that from someone other than me. The source of that compassion and mercy, I didn't have to pull it out of my own energy. Therefore, it did not need to be replenished. It was getting pulled from an endless source of energy that never needs replenishing. This is what it means to truly love and to allow the other to be free. The receiver can either accept it and participate in the circle of love, that circular relationship where he shows love back, or not. It's his choice. Once I became dependent on Jesus for that emotion, I no longer needed the love to come back to me from the other person. This is how you love your enemies. Now I will be navigating this new insight. My nature is to self-sacrifice and to meet others' needs. But it's always been at the expense of my own. So I am having to rely on my emotions to tell me what it is that I really want, what it is that I really feel. Showing compassion is a whole completely different animal than self-sacrifice. And Jesus even says this, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. That's what he means. It will be a challenge for me in the days ahead. A real challenge, and I am going to have to learn how to tap into that divine vine that feeds my soul in order to show mercy and compassion without giving up anything of myself. For more information like this, go to my website, zaxislife.com. Check out my book, How to Get Over Your Narc in 95 Days, on Amazon. You can also watch these podcasts on YouTube. My channel is called Z-Axis Life.